Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Cheltimer, my co-host Felicity Sidnell Reed, and our guest this week, Vanessa Westerman. Each week we visit with an author, an editor, or perhaps a publisher who have regional or local connections. We hope to find out a little bit about their lives and ask them what prompts them to write. We give them an opportunity to read some of their work for us, and we're very pleased to have Vanessa Westerman with us today. Welcome, Vanessa.
Thank you so much for having me.
Vanessa Westerman's debut mystery, An Excuse for Murder, was published in March 2019 by the Wild Rose Press. Vanessa is a former Arthur Ellis Awards judge and has given a talk on the evolution of women's crime writing at the Toronto chapter of Sisters in Crime. Her book review column entitled Vanessa's Picks was published in Sleuth of Baker Street Mystery Bookstore's monthly newsletter from 2012 to 2016. The column was developed into a blog featuring crime fiction reviews and literary interviews. While living in Germany, Vanessa earned an MA in English Literature and went on to teach creative writing. Vanessa currently lives in Canada and is working on her next novel while drinking copious amounts of tea. So Vanessa, An Excuse for Murder is told from the perspective of Gary Fenris, a haunted former bodyguard who commits murder, and from the perspective of Kate Rowan, a bookstore owner who discovers the body. What inspired you to write An Excuse for Murder from the points of view of both the murderer and the sleuth?
I actually began writing An Excuse for Murder just from the point of view of the amateur sleuth who finds the body of a tenant in her great-aunt's home. Spontaneously, I started drafting a few short scenes from the murderer's perspective. He was still just a shadowy figure at the time, but I knew that his motive for murder was revenge. The woman he loved died on his watch. It should be easy for him to kill, and it is. As a former bodyguard, he has the skills to pull off the perfect crime. But his biggest mistake is thinking that vengeance can bring him peace. The murderer in these early scenes was proving to be both tortured and likable, and I knew he needed to tell his side of the story. He already had such a strong voice that he soon took on a life of his own and had the potential to even steal the show from Kate. And so I decided to write An Excuse for Murder from both points of view. This creates tension in the story because one is trying to solve the mystery while the other is trying to prevent the truth from being discovered, and yet they're linked by a growing attraction to each other. And of course, this flash of inspiration led to a major rewrite.
Yeah, I bet it did. So how do you organize such a thing? I mean, normally in a mystery, readers are trying to work out who the murderer is on their own, but in this case we know. So how do you organize the two points of view?
It was a little tricky, I have to admit. The novel alternates from chapter to chapter between Gary and Kate's points of view. Throughout the course of the book, their lives begin to intersect. After Gary commits murder, he runs into Kate in the local cafe and overhears her say she found the body. So despite the risk, or maybe because of it, Gary finds himself drawn to her, the attractive and spirited owner of Fortune's Cove Books. To Gary, Kate represents a new beginning, and Kate starts to recognize in Gary the potential of reality, in contrast to the fictional worlds she normally preferred in her books. The closer Gary gets to Kate, the harder it is for him to keep his crime a secret. So suspense is created, and I hope it is, from the question of what Kate will do if she discovers that she's falling in love with a murderer.
Yeah, that would be quite a discovery, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so you've got these two plot lines and characters colliding here, so did you sit down and actually plot out an outline before you wrote it?
I wish I had. It would have saved me a lot of time, but I did a bit of both. An Excuse for Murder began as a character sketch of a woman in a hat shop who drops an unopened letter from her long-deceased husband. She later became Kate's aunt, the elegant widow who fills her Victorian house with strangers to keep her own ghosts from the past at bay. I started An Excuse for Murder with the idea that one of this woman's tenants was murdered. I started writing without a plan to see where the story would take me, but once I saw the potential for a novel-length murder mystery, I drafted an outline. I tend to work much more closely with an outline now, but I still find the plot develops more naturally when I listen to my characters. I've learned that if I'm having trouble with a scene, I'm trying to make a character do something that doesn't suit their personality.
Yeah, I can concur with that. So what inspired the creation of the two protagonists? Well, I guess the antagonist and the protagonist, I'm not quite sure what they are in this case.
Yes, a little bit of both. I couldn't resist seizing the opportunity to write a mystery about a bookstore owner. I think that owning a bookstore is probably a dream come true for any bookworm, and what better way to live out that fantasy than to write about it? And the research process was quite fun because I had a good reason to visit all of my favorite bookstores again. But when I first began developing the plot, I was also writing my master's thesis in English literature, which included a chapter on the role of fairy tales in explaining reality to children. And I began to think about the power that stories and the imagination have on the physical world. So this question became a predominant theme in An Excuse for Murder, reflected through Kate's passion for stories and her unfailing narrative curiosity. In fact, her best friend Marcus often has to remind her that it's dangerous to draw conclusions on reality from fiction. And once I had decided to tell the story also from the point of view of the murderer, I knew he had to be a tormented male protagonist who you might find walking the moors with Heathcliff or sharing a whiskey with Sam Spade in a bar. After the woman he loved died on his watch, Gary swears to take revenge. And so he uses love as an excuse for murder. Although Gary takes a life in cold blood, he's also an honorable man, someone who keeps his promises and will readily admit to his faults.
Well, maybe you can introduce us to some of these characters. Will you read to us?
I'd love to. I'd actually like to share two scenes with you from Gary's point of view. The first is from the beginning of the book, when Gary is still a bodyguard. He's in a parking lot in London, England, with the woman he's protecting, and he senses that something is wrong. The pressure came from above his left shoulder, a sudden shift in the air. A whistle of sound passed his ear. Her body jerked against his as she staggered. At first, he thought the bullet had missed its mark, that sweet, heady gasp of relief. His next instinct was to find safety, to clear the scene. His thoughts were already racing through the following stages. Make sure the shooter was no longer on the scene. Check for wounded, for injury. She was sliding toward the ground. It was as though a weight was pulling her down and him with her until he was on the pavement next to her. He pressed against the wound, blood running warm across his knuckles to pool on the ground, damp beneath his knees. He knew there was little to be done for a chest wound like this. The acrid, sweet, metallic smell of her blood was nauseating and unforgettable, altering her familiar scent into the bitter stench of impending loss. There was a surge of focused movement behind him, running footsteps, cries for help, a siren in the distance. Her heart beat beneath his hand, fainter each time. With each beat, she was slipping farther away from him, and all he could think about was finding the person who pulled that trigger. Rage compressed within his chest, a cold force. Hatred pulsed in the sharp pain at his temples, in the clenched fingers of his blood-stained hand. He should have moved faster, turned in time, gotten her out of the way. He should have relied on his own instincts, instead of being distracted. It was his fault. He could feel her last painful breath burn in his own lungs. He would calculate the exact trajectory of the shot. He would dissect that moment, tear it apart, and find who did this. Hunt them the way they hunted her. Dense impressions crowded his mind, clarifying and concentrating. The pavement grinding against his knees, the sun reflecting off her blood, steam rising, the weight of her in his arms, the wild arch of her throat, the curve of her cheek, the guilt aching like violence in his bones. So that moment is a turning point for Gary. A man who has spent his career saving lives makes the decision to hunt someone down in cold blood. Over the next 2 years, Gary plots his revenge. He sets up his own security company and tracks down the man who pulled the trigger. But he remains haunted by her death, which leads me to the next excerpt. He took a swig from the bottle, drinking deeply. The slow burn of barley and honey had him gasping. Gary turned, his back to the wall, scotch in one hand. He slid to the ground and let his head fall back. He rested the bottle on one raised knee and stared into the shadows. They shifted and gathered, clotting in the corners of the room. The ghost of her laughter teased across his skin, raising the hairs on his arms. There she was, vibrant, as though she was in the room with him. "Don't tell me you don't like it," she said as she gave her new dress a twirl, barefoot and beautiful, all ready for a night out, but for the heels she would wait to put on to the last. Her toenails were painted red, the arch of her foot flexed, strong and graceful with the movement. Her blonde hair shone in the light of memory. She stopped short, the soft blue fabric swinging against her legs, and grinned at him. It went straight through him. He raised the bottle to his lips, holding on to the vision. It wavered beneath the intensity of his gaze. Then there was nothing on the floor but scuff marks and the shimmer of dust. Her trainers, mud-caked from that morning's 8-kilometer run, took up the space where her heels should have been. He had almost forgotten the way she used to toe her shoes off, always sliding the left one off first for some inexplicable reason. The wall was cold and hard against his back, the scotch smooth and warm. There was no other choice. He'd made his decision 2 years ago. It was time. Tomorrow, he would commit murder.
Well, thank you, Vanessa. We've been speaking with Vanessa Westerman, a mystery writer, and she's come to talk to us about her debut mystery novel, An Excuse for Murder. And now we'll take a short break.